at this point, I think everybody is busy in a frantic mode writing their grants. So it's just a few of us, a couple of us today. We might have a couple people joining in. But I thought what I'd do is just go over the final part of this grant, and then we can talk a little bit about submissions and a little bit about the program. This last section is the attachment section. And, of course, we're limited to 20 pages, single spaced. And that's it's pretty well defined what we need to put in the attachments. Your eligibility, which is basically your 501c3, unless you're a government entity, but if you're a nonprofit and you're the primary applicant, you need to show them that you're eligible, and they'll check that first. They'll go right to that and make sure that you're eligible. That's in part of the threshold criteria. And that doesn't count against your page count, because sometimes there's several pages in those certifications or the 501c3 approval letters. It might be two or three pages. So that doesn't really account against the page count. Then there's four other things that they're basically looking for. The first is the reference list, and these are not to be confused with letters. And then what they want is references, and they want names, phone numbers, contact information. And there's six people that they say they may call. They'll call them. We're not sure if they're going to call all of them, or they'll just call one of each or a sampling. But they want to know first, people, if you've got people who have been hired by someone, they want to know the employee's name and the participant's name. These are for programs that are already going, or if you have a similar program, if you can get the name of an employer and a participant. And it's pretty, what you really need to do is talk to them first and tell them what you're doing, and ask if it'd be okay if they're contacted, just to talk about your program if they're contacted by EPA, and explain your program to them so they won't be kind of hit cold on this. And these would be the employers and the participants, and they basically want to see how does the program work, are you happy with the training that you received in the past. And this is very important for re-ups and people who have had training EPA programs in the past. New programs, it might not be quite the same. You might have a similar program, like a job training program or a youth build type program where you're doing construction trades. And in that case, you may put down, indicate that you didn't have an environmental training program, but you had a, say, a youth build program. And here are some examples of people who went through the construction trades program and their employer, and you would definitely need to contact them, tell them that they may be called, and what the purpose of that is, and just to talk about your program. This will give the EPA a good check on what you've done in the past. They want two neighborhood community-based organizations, neighborhood organizations that are going to work with you. You definitely, again, you want to make sure that they are aware of your program. Those are people that will help you with recruitment, with placement, awareness. And, again, you'd want to get specific contact names, just not the organization name, but someone in that organization, and pretty much have them briefed on what you're doing and how you'd like to work with them in your recruitment effort and working with the community. And then two employers who worked with you in developing your plan. These would be people that you would probably use on your advisory board. In fact, there's a lot of synergism in all of these things. You'd probably want the... Someone just joined? Okay. You'd want someone who is going to be on your advisory board. And these would be perhaps one of your major employers or hiring environmental personnel, people that may be contributing to the program or leveraging the program. So you want to get those six references, and that's pretty objective. Names, addresses, what their relationship is to you, phone numbers, and of course making sure that they're very well briefed. So that's the reference section of the attachments. Then we have the training program outline, which is kind of broken into two sections. The first part is your training plan, basically, which are your certifications, your start and stop dates, and your scheduling, your curriculum plan. And this is your detailed plan of what you're going to teach, how your courses are laid out, certifications you're going to offer, pretty much your training outline. One of the questions that came up in the last week or so was, is that locked in stone? Once you get into this program, that may change. And that's true. This is not, they're not going to necessarily hold you to this. It gives them an idea that you know what you're talking about. And, of course, that training plan has to be consistent with the requirements of the grants, that you make sure that you have your HAZWOPR certification in there, you have RRMP in there if you're in an urban area, true lead training. You have the awareness training incorporated into different courses as electives. You might have some confined space and some OSHA other OSHA certifications in there, whether you have asbestos in there. So you're laying out your training plan, the hours of training delivered, start essentially where they would occur in your curriculum. And again, being aware that that plan may change as you get into the program or as your program between now and when your program starts, you may get new information that would change that plan. The second part of that training program outline is your tracks and the numbers that are you expecting to go through. Again, these aren't contractual obligations, but more to give them an idea of what you're planning on doing in terms of bringing people into recruitment and what your enrollment from the recruitment would be in your anticipated graduates. And this should be consistent with your narrative. You may have a pre-screening program that would be incorporated in this chart. You might have a pre-screening, your planned recruitment, the actual enrollment, and graduates. And, of course, what's not on here is the anticipated projection of placements. We're all assuming we're going to place 100% of them. We're looking for 70% minimum, but you want to assume you're going to place 100%. You don't have to put that in the chart, but they just want to get an idea of the numbers of people you're planning on running through your program. Then the fourth section in the attachment is the milestones and basic start, stop, completion dates. Now, this is going to be difficult because you don't know when the contract, when the RFPs will be awarded. We're assuming they come in March. They'll be evaluated, hopefully awarded in summer, and you'll be able to get started in fall, and then your graduates will start coming out for next spring, early in the year. One thing about it is, in terms of timing, it's very, in some climates, it's very difficult to place people in heavy winter months because there's not a lot of construction going on, not a lot of environmental activity. So that may play into it. Out in California, that may not be an issue, or in the southern states. So, but one way to do this is to base this on on months from initial start. So you may start at a certain date and so many months into
it. Jean Marie Crockett, Santa Fe Community College.
Hey, Jean Marie. We're just talking about the attachment section and pretty much going through the five steps of what needs to be in the attachments. And so the milestones, if you put specific months down there, that may definitely change because depending on the variability of the grant award. But they're, again, they want to get a feel for if a person goes in October, when is he going to graduate, in December or in June, you know, of the next year. So it gives them an idea of how your program is going to be laid out. And then the last section is the support letter section. And there's several kinds of support letters. And what they're looking for, and we, as we've discussed before, are basically these, I call them commitment letters. And there's two types. They fall into two categories. One for institutional capacity. They want to see some letters from your training provider. If you're going to use a community college or a training organization, they would like a letter from them that their commitment to support your program. And, of course, in that section, I think it's 5-4, there's, I think, 8 points or allocated the section that looks at your training capability, and they want to know that you do have a plan for training, and someone's got the capability to provide the certification courses and the training that you're going to need for that. And then they also want commitment letters from the community and the employer partnerships, and these are very important. And ideally commitment to, not necessarily to hire, but commitment to interview. So you would want to get commitment letters, not just general letters that say we support your program, we think this is a good thing, but letters that are more oriented towards we would be interested in interviewing your participants. So this is the kind of letters that you're looking for. So, and this is in the support letter section. So a lot of these things will, they're synergistic. They go in with the other. You're going to need, when you start talking about employer partnerships, to some extent, you know, that also links into your reference list and your advisory committees and into your narratives. So, but this is the section where you're able to put these support letters, your milestone charts, your references, and which is a little bit different than the narrative. And, of course, you're limited to 20 pages. It's about the right amount of space you need to do this. It should give you plenty of room to fit all these things in, and single space. The hardest part, I think, of all that is all the work that it needs in terms of preparation of getting the contact. I think the hardest part of this whole attachment are getting those commitment letters and references together, so getting the people on board that are going to be working with you to know that they're going to be called, or there's a good chance of them being called by EPA as this thing progresses. And, of course, you have to think of the timing. You're submitting this in March 18th, so they'll probably be contacted in April, later part of April, and so you don't want them to forget about your program. What you probably should do is, if you haven't been working with them already, need to be contacting them, provide them with perhaps some background written material. And then probably in about 3 weeks, I would call them again just to let them know that you've submitted your grant and that there's a good likelihood they'll be calling just to talk about the program and perhaps their involvement and commitment to the program and what their relationship will be to you. So, in other words, keep your name in front of them and the name of your program in front of them so that when they're called by EPA, it'll be on their hand. They'll be very familiar with that. And you might talk to them about serving on the advisory committee, and also the employers, when you expect your first graduating class to come out, and invite them to some of the programs you're going to be having. Perhaps they'll even provide lectures, which is a great way to bring them on board. And you want to get them to buy into the program and get them used to doing, working with you and with name recognition, go from there. That pretty much covers what you're going to need in that attachment. And of course, in the last couple of weeks, we talked about that submission process. At this point in time, you really, unless you're going to submit by hard copy, you really need to have your electronic paperwork registration and all of that in process, because that does take a little while. If you're going to submit hard copy, in both cases, by now you should have called your regional rep to make sure that they know you're going to submit. That they can't really discuss the grant too much with you, but they can certainly know that your grant will be coming along, and they'd appreciate you touching base with them. Just call them and introduce yourself. Tell them that you're doing the finishing touches on your grant, and this is what you're planning, and you're looking forward to working with them in the future. And as close as you can get to that regional rep, just to let them know that there'll be a grant from your organization coming in is a big help, and it'll help you as you go down further down the line. Does anyone have any questions or comments or issues about the attachment section of this proposal?
Typically, how long does it take for them to make the announcement of who is selected?
It takes a lot longer, it seems, than we would like them to. They're going out in March. They always say that they're going to be on a fast track. What often happens is another conflict comes up. There's another set of proposals they have to evaluate, or something happens. I expect, and Glo could add to this, I expect, and they'd like to have these out in June or July. Glo, is that about what you feel?
Yeah, Joe hasn't said either way, but yeah, you're right. It's usually toward the beginning of the summer months. But just like Mike said, for example, last year, it wasn't, oh, gosh, it was pushing the end of August, wasn't it, Mike, before
right.
those announcements were made?
Right. We schedule.
And then typically it takes about 60 days to get the contract signed and everything.
Right. So by the time, if you figure August, September, October, you're...
So by the end of the federal fiscal year, that should be in place.
Right, right. They're going to want to have that money out the door, or pretty much everything signed out by the end of the fiscal. So
I think so, too, that if there's holdups for that mechanism at EPA, they do allow some of the grantees to work under that pre-award, I can't remember the exact terminology that they use, but they like the grants to start at the same time, and so if they think that it isn't going to take too much longer, they give you like a 60-day pre-award working time. Do you remember what that's called, Mike?
Yes, it's a look back, and they allow you to charge off 60, and they've gone, I think, as long as 90 days. This happened last year.
Right.
The people were able to get started. They were delayed last year, and we have a annual conference in August, and they like the new grantees to come to this conference. So they usually like us to make sure we announce and invite the new grantees to the annual conference. It's in Alexandria each year. We're going to start preparing for that in the next month or so.
We're in the process of getting bid requests for that.
Right. And it's a great conference, actually, just to diverse a little bit from the topic. At this workshop, all new grantees are asked to come, and all the old grantees are asked to come, and alumni, those who don't have funds, and those who are currently funded. We end up with about 100 people. All of the EPA people come, the EPA regional people, The assistant administrator comes, his staff comes. We get the Jim Drummond, who is the attorney for EPA, comes to talk very candidly off the record about the legal aspects and fiscal aspects of these grants, what you should watch out for, how you have to report. The Acres people come in terms of reporting. So it's a great little boot camp, and then we break into breakout groups. And in the breakout groups, we basically do what we've done in the PLC. We talk about all the issues that are faced by the grantees, and including the recruitment, the marketing, the curriculum, health and safety issues, placement issues, tracking issues. So it's definitely, when you get the grant, you want to. It's a big help to be able to attend this conference, and I'm sure EPA is going to want us to have our meeting after everyone's announced. What may happen is they will be announced in June, and they'll have to sign up for the workshop in Alexandria in June, so they'll allow them to look back. In other words, the money may not be in the door, but they'll be able to come to the conference. And then
using that money.
Yeah, using that money, and they will have been announced. But that's what I guess our best guess of how this will work, or how it'll come down. Those who don't meet threshold criteria, of course, will find out in 15 days or so that they're not eligible or whatever the reason is. So I think they may have about, while they've got maybe 100 people applying, 120, 30, they're going to knock out a whole lot right off the bat. Those people who are writing this thing in the last 2 weeks, those who aren't eligible, they may knock out, bring it down to 80 or so, and then they're going to go down to 13. And they're going to, pretty much those who have followed this conference call will be right on track, because there'll be a lot of people who are going to look at this and just do a general grant writing job, and they won't be aware that they have to answer every one of these questions very precisely. And if they don't, they're going to get knocked out real fast. So those who have been on these PLCs and have come to these conference calls are going to be in tune to, I expect that arena of those people who are sophisticated enough to run will bring it probably down to 30 or so. And then now you're talking about a 3-to-1 in terms of those who will be funded. So I think the wisest thing we can say is, you know, very specifically, as we've said over and over again, make sure you answer every question very specifically. Don't miss any questions. Treat it like an essay test, but be extremely concise and give as many numbers as you can. Do your own needs assessment. Get good references and recommendations. Those are probably the best words of advice we can give for that. Glow, is there anything you would add to that?
No, I think you got it pretty much covered. They just need to be sure to answer each and every question.
Right.
I think that in this RFP, unlike past ones, that's even stated.
Right.
In the RFP itself.
But you'd be amazed at how many people will just skip over some, and they'll try to answer these as general. They'll take four questions, and they'll try to write something general that'll hit them all, and that's just not going to hack it. And they'll get points deducted for that. One last thing I would say is, in the event you're not picked, or you get snowed under, or it's just more work than you anticipated this would be when you get into it, I would submit and then come back and don't worry about it if you don't get it. But I would plan on next year. Almost at our annual conference, we have people raise their hands. How many of you got it on the first try? And there aren't a whole lot of hands that come up. And then how many have tried twice? Hands come up. How many three times? Hands come up. A lot of the ones that end up being successful may not hit it right off the bat. And so this is one grant. Unless this Congress severely cuts this program. And right now, I don't know that they're going to cut the jobs program. The CBDG funds may get cut. Those are community development block grants, and those are grants that are used in brownfields quite extensively. But we have to remember that there is about 10% of the brownfields have job training programs, and the EPA is very committed to job training, and this is the only EPA-funded job training program. So chances are there's a good chance, even though EPA budgets may be cut, this program has a potential of actually expanding a little bit. And because it's a job program, I think it has a certain amount of protection. What I'm saying is basically, if for some reason you're not successful in this round, keep everything in place and then build on it for the next round and then try to participate over the next 6 or 8 months in some of these things we're going to sponsor. We've had three PLC cycles. This is actually the 39th one we've had, 39th call, third cycle. And we're going to be taking a break for a few weeks, and then we'll be starting up another cycle. So what I would suggest and invite people, we won't be talking in the next cycle so much about writing the grant, but we'll be talking about starting up job training programs and in general about environmental job training. So what I would suggest anyone is to go ahead, work on this grant. Let's get this grant in, and then next month when we start up the new round of professional learning community calls, get on board, and we'll continue this dialogue of 30-minute conversations on setting up these job training programs. If between now and the 18th anyone has any questions, just send them in to GLO or myself. We'll send you some post-session notes, and if you have some questions, send them in, and we'll get some answers out all the way up to the 18th as you're working through this. So with that, we try to hold these to 30 minutes, and this, like I say, will be the last of this third cycle, but we'll be starting up again in about a month, and everyone will get invites to join the professional learning community. Again, it won't be necessarily about writing to this grant for this submission, but it'll be about new opportunities that are coming up in job training and preparing for it. And with that, anything anyone would like to say? Anything that we need to talk about before we end the conversation?
Hey, when is that Brownfield conference again?
The one we're going to hold will be in August. That's one of them. That's just for grantees, job training grantees. Now, there's another one that's very important. It's called Brownfields 2011. And if you can get the money to go to Philadelphia, it's free. All you have to do is get yourself over to Philadelphia. And I'll put the contact information and how to sign up for it. It's April 3rd to April 5th, so it's coming up real soon. Everyone who has anything to do with Brownfields is at this. HMTRI, we will have a booth. We'll also have a session, which we'll put in the notes. Our session is going to be working with EPA and working with NIEHS to talk about job training programs. And we're going to get together, everyone in a room, and talk about how it's starting up one of these programs. So, Al, was that you, Al?
Yes.
I'm hoping you can get over to Philadelphia in April. I'll put the notice up there. You could also go to the website. It's called brownfields2011.org, and they've got registration information there, and it doesn't cost you anything. All you have to do is pay for your food and your lodging. And your
if I remember right, too, I think the online registration closes on the 18th. So.
Okay. So you'll have to sign up for that. It's a great conference every year. And they have all kinds of good sessions, and the EPA administrator will be there. All the people involved in this grant will be there. They won't be able to talk about the grant, but they'll have probably seen them. And,
okay.
But if you can get there, and if you get there, stop by our booth, and we'll chat for
a while. Well, I probably could only, well, I'll look at the agenda and spare a day or two, and I'm trying to decide, should I come the first 2 days or the last 2 days?
Well, I'd come the first 2 days because it starts Sunday. Monday and Tuesday are the power days. Usually it winds down. Everyone's all revved up the first day. Now, this is a little different, and they're starting registration on Sunday. They usually start on Monday. So it starts on it starts Sunday and ends on Wednesday. Sunday, everyone will be registering. The power day is going to be Monday and Tuesday. So I would say if I had one day, if there was one day I had hotel accommodations for, it'd be Monday night, and I'd come in on Monday, go to the sessions. I think they'll have a meet and greet and heavy hors d'oeuvres Monday night, and then Tuesday is going to be a power day. There'll be a lot of.
That's what I think I'm gonna try to do. If I can come and fly up early Monday morning, spend all day Monday, all day Tuesday, and fly out late Tuesday night.
Yeah, that works. That would be your best bet right there. That way you'll see 90% of 80% of what's going on. That should
That's
do
the
it.
Least cost.
Yep.
Because as a consultant, I have to pay for it out of my pocket.
That's right. So, well, stop on by and look for the HMTRI booth and also our session, which will be on Tuesday. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's going to be on Monday. I'll put it in the post-session notes, the exact time and room. Well, okay. Everyone take care, and we'll talk to you soon. And just send us any emails if you have any questions. We'll kind of go from there. And good luck on this grant to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your help.
Okay. Take care now.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.